You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, October 5th, 2017.
But if we look at Bloomington, I mean, we're close to a matriarchy at this point. We're doing pretty well. Yeah. So I think locally we do really well.
Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge faced an uphill battle in the Democratic primary in 2016. A licensed, practicing social worker and therapist, Barge has helped tackle Rise to Run, a national effort to get more women on the ballot, and last week's inaugural Monroe County Opioid Summit.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks Bloomington residents, what kind of development do you want to see in downtown? But first, these local headlines.
Completion of the animal shelter's expansion and renovations are now being pushed to early March of 2018. Virgil Sauder, Executive Director of Bloomington Animal Care and Control, explained the need for changes to the city's renovation contract with NIDIG Construction in the Bloomington Board of Public Works October 3rd meeting.
The largest portion of the change order was an unsuitable soil issue. During routine testing of the soil, unsuitable soil was discovered, and it was about 184 cubic yards of soil needed to be removed and replaced in order to prove stability to the building and the structure. That added $35,435.76 to the cost, as well as five extra days to the project.
Commission member Dana Palazzo asked what made the soil unsuitable.
In addition to just not having the density needed for the project, there were actually tires that they had to pull out. Again, it was corner of the parking lot, and you know, the parking lot, what is needed to sustain a parking lot is different than the building, so they had to remove a bit of that. And that wasn't found in the original borings that were done.
Other unanticipated changes to the construction plans include a preventative termite treatment, adding downspout drains, and an unexpected rock excavation. Combined, the changes total more than $40,000. During staff reports, projects manager Christina Smith had updates for the public on the rollout of the city's new automated sanitation program.
But we wanted to remind the public that starting October the 9th, the week of October the 9th and the week of October through the 19th, on your regular trash day, if you do not want your trash containers or recycling bins, you can put them on your trash day next to your new carts, and we will take care of them. The recyclable content material in the recycling bins will be recycled. The citizens are welcome to keep the recycling bins if they have a use for them, but if they do not, we've made provisions to help them in taking those away for them.
Smith said the city will reimburse residents for pre-purchased but unused trash stickers.
Any one, a citizen that has leftover trash stickers may come to City Hall in the Public Works Office, Suite 120, and bring their trash stickers, and $20 and below will be refunded with cash. Anything over $20 will go through the controller's office claims cycle, and they will receive a refund check. We will also be at the, a staff representative will be at the farmer's market on October the 28th from 9 to 1 for refunds. And then refunds after the 28th will all be in the form of a check. And we've contacted all the vendors and reminded them to please bring them into the Public Works Suite for a refund.
Smith said the city has run out of 35-gallon carts, but expects to have more in stock in 4 to 6 weeks. In the meantime, the city is distributing 64-gallon carts in place of the 35-gallon carts.
The citizens who did not get a cart, we are delivering those, and we are delivering them 64s, because that's what we have on hand to use in the interim. In the event that the citizen wanted a 35, they will not be charged for a 64. They will be charged for a 35. And if, we don't want anyone to be out any extra money because we ran out of carts.
The next meeting of the Board of Public Works is scheduled for October 17th.
Southern Indiana Cooperative Investment Management and the USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service have agreed to develop four new local grassroots organizations they are calling Cooperative Invasive Species Management Areas, or CISMAs. Jane Hardesty, state conservationist for Indiana USDA, says landlords with an invasive species problem can contact their CISMA and get help.
The Southern Indiana Cooperative Invasive Management Group came to us as USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service and have entered into a contribution agreement in supporting their efforts in dealing with a very serious resource concern of invasive species, particularly brush honeysuckle and other types of species is kind of taking over our woodlots and surrounding areas.
Will Drews, the natural resource specialist with the USDA County Soil District, says the goal of CISMA is to tackle invasive species at a bigger level.
Our group, the Southern Indiana Cooperative Invasive Management, we're kind of a regional invasive species management group. We've been working on trying to do work with invasive species locally, and they've been working on invasive species management on kind of a landowner-by-landowner basis. And so now we're trying to kind of pool resources together in order to tackle the invasive species problem.
To combat the problem of invasive species, CISMA plans to address local people and local resources. The four regional CISMAs are volunteer-based.
So we've entered into an agreement with them, and it's exciting to see. This is a group that just works with local people to work together to educate and provide information to landowners on how to deal with these invasive species.
According to Drews, both organizations have had a lot of back-and-forth collaboration to address the concerning encroachment of invasive species.
Talked with some staff with NRCS about how we could best do this and if they'd be willing to help provide some money for this program, and in which case they kind of came back to us about wanting us to try to expand it to the rest of the state. And so that's what we're trying to do here.
In a news release by Southern Indiana Cooperative Invasive Management Board member Troy Hinkle, quote, under the five-year contribution agreement, NRCS will provide partial funding for SICIM to retire staff who will work with SWCDs and other conservation organizations to develop or enhance CISMAs that cover one or two counties, unquote. The funds are pooled from both local and private sources, with the total amounting to over $1.8 million. The Southern Indiana Cooperative Investment Management Group says the USDA put over $900,000 into the five-year agreement, and the group agreed to raise an equal amount through grants, donations, and contributions from other conservation organizations. The Southern Indiana Cooperative Investment Management says they will offer free technical assistance to landowners wanting to get rid of invasive plant species. The group currently offers property surveying and management plans to concerned homeowners. Hardesty says he believes that the Southern Indiana Cooperative Invasive Management Group will help landowners manage invasive species.
That technical assistance is really helping promote the awareness and the control of invasive plant and actually working one-on-one with the private landowner. This could be done by our local office, or it could be a staff from this Southern Indiana Cooperative Management Group. And it's actually going out on the farm, helping to identify what the species is and developing a plan so that they know how to deal with trying to get rid of it.
The Southern Indiana Cooperative Invasement Management Group is a collective effort by the state and federal government to help combat invasive species.
The Bloomington City Council voiced unanimous support for a proposed agreement between the city and the Cook Group, under which Cook pays the city not to annex its properties. In exchange, the city agrees not to annex Cook's properties for not to annex Cook properties in the county. Mayor Hamilton voiced his support for the agreement, acknowledging that Cook didn't agree with the city's attempt earlier this year to annex areas of the county on the edge of Bloomington's city limits. The council postponed voting on a resolution that would reallocate the county's public safety tax to send more money to 911 Central Dispatch in 2018. If adopted, the resolution would increase the percentage of public safety tax the emergency dispatch receives to 33%, up from 29%. The increase is in support of a countywide communication project proposed by the emergency dispatch. City Council members Isabel Piedmont-Smith, Susan Sandberg, and Allison Chopra all sit on the Monroe County Income Tax Council's Public Safety Tax Committee, which is recommending the reallocation. As a member of that committee, Piedmont Smith voted in August against increasing the emergency dispatch budget to cover the communication project.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at SmithvilleSecurity.com.
Amanda Barge is a first-term Monroe County Commissioner. After winning the 2016 Democratic primary, she went on to win in last November's general election, despite the Republican Party's statewide sweep. A licensed, practicing social worker and therapist, she's already made news in her leadership roles in Rise to Run, a national effort to get more women on the ballot, and in the local opioid summit. Barge finds social work and serving on the county commission to be similar jobs. She joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest in the studio this week, Amanda Barge. Amanda, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I've been talking to certain Democratic Party big shots. And I got the idea that when you came up with the idea to run, they tried to say, watch yourself. Be careful. Don't get your heart broken. It's going to be tough. Matter of fact, you ran against two big shots yourself, John Weikart and Rick Dietz, in the Democratic primary. Somehow you won. How the heck did you win that primary?
Well, you're right. I did. I was told, well, this will be really hard, and this will be great experience for you. You'll probably won't win, but that'll be good experience. And I think for me, you know, I put together a really good team of people that had a lot of experience, like Charlotte Zitlow, Regina Moore, several people from like Isabel Piedmont Smith and Cheryl Munson, people that were elected officials. But I also brought people who were new to politics and had never done it before. And like friends of mine, one who had organized the recycling program at my kid's school, and I knew she was organized and knew a lot about environmental issues. So I had her come on. She had all this enthusiasm. So it was a really big grassroots campaign. And really my entire family participated. You know, my husband, my kids wrote letters to voters. My parents, my mom came from Ohio, my aunts and uncles, we had everybody kind of working. My sisters-in-law, four sisters-in-law. So it was really fun. It was actually, we had a blast. And I think, you know, just like there was a combination of just the issues that were really important to me were issues that other people were actually cared about, like addiction, social services.
You told people that you wanted to bring a social worker's mentality to this job, and a lot of people said, they were skeptical. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Sure. So when I started looking at the job, I was so surprised at how similar it was to being a social worker, which is being a social worker is all about problem solving and communicating and helping people solve difficult issues. And when I looked at what a commissioner did, it was the same thing. You know, no day is the same. You're always dealing with people's difficulty, maybe whether it's a county employee or an upset resident. And those communication skills are key in bringing people together. And that's what I've been doing since I became commissioner, which is just making sure to build relationships with people. And it's been great. And it's a perfect job for a social worker, actually.
There's a certain amount of griping that you have to listen to and validate in both jobs.
Yes, yes. Almost every day somebody has something that they need help with. So you use your listening skills and I always problem solve.
You have your own private practice. It's just you. You're a sole practitioner. Apparently you specialize in life changes and transitions. Mm-hmm. Is that good?
I'd say, yeah. So yeah, people come, anytime you go to see a therapist, you're probably dealing with a life change. But yeah, I work with families and also do addictions work and couples mm-hmm. work. That's what I specialize in.
You were involved in the Rise to Run kickoff event mm-hmm. in September. The idea being, let's get some women into elective office. Let's get women running.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why aren't women running?
That's a great question. That's the question we always try to answer. So the women that kind of I know are afraid because they have families and they don't want their business in the paper. They don't want, you know, their private business. They don't want their kids to be hurt by something that gets said about them, or they're too busy taking on several different roles and they don't feel like they can give up time away from their family. And if they don't have kids, I still think politics is kind of a tough world, and women don't always feel like they know how to fit right in that world. But if we look at
how to be punchers.
Yes, but if we look at Bloomington, I mean, we're close to a matriarchy at this point. We're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
So I think locally we do really well.
What were your qualifications? Where do you get off running for office?
That's a great question. Well, I mean, I think for me, you know, I had a lot of experience helping other people with campaigns. And I helped, before I decided to run, I helped a lot of people. I'm involved with the Democratic Women's Caucus. And I was raised on politics. So I have my family, both sides of my family are very political. It was kind of like I'd call it our sport, sort of.
When you were a little girl, your mother brought you to the Monroe County Democratic Party headquarters to stuff envelopes.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit more about that. What was she so involved about?
Well, her dad was a labor organizer, a union organizer, and in Pennsylvania, and so their family we were very politically active. And she was really raised by her older sister, who was a director of ACLU in Nevada and also the chair of Democratic Party, just very active. So she met my dad on my dad's side. The same thing. My grandpa was the auditor of Jennings County in Indiana, and just very political. So when they came together, that was kind of our big, you know, that's what we did. We watched debates, we talked politics, we argued. And so my mom, for her, you know, being part of the community was always crucial. It wasn't an option. We had to do something in the community. So she would drag me to the headquarters. It wasn't always my favorite thing, but I did it. And, you know, I really did enjoy it. I made phone calls, and my friends and I went, I was old enough, we drove people to the polls, too. So it was pretty, yeah. It had a big impact. We actually would go to the HT and watch the returns as well, because you used to be able to do that back in the day.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. What's your first memory of the greater political world?
Oh,
what
my gosh.
Memory do you
my
have?
Dad's going to kill me. But this is my first memory, and I don't know what year it was, but my dad was throwing a shoe at the TV because somebody had won. I swear that's my first memory. I know. Yeah, I do. I remember it. He was super mad. I don't know who won. I don't know. But he was really upset about the outcome. Very passionate. And he threw a shoe. And I remember being like, wow. But I was pretty little. But the first person that really inspired me is Bill Clinton, to be honest. One of my first, but just, you know, he came out and he was different than everybody else. So
think of his line. I keep on telling people the signature line of his. You know how, you know, Donald Trump made hay just by saying, make America great again. That really touched a lot of people.
Yeah.
Clinton's line that did the same thing in his day was, I feel your pain.
Uh-huh.
He was a social worker.
He was a social worker. He's good at connecting. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what you got to do, for sure.
Right. And you've got to say that thing that touches the person's heart.
Or he'd always say, like, let's leave the country better than we found it, which I love. So,
you call yourself a proud progressive.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, for me, progressive is something that gets a little bit overused, but I think for me it's just being open-minded to change and making sure that we keep working for equality, and I'm a feminist, so always working for women's equality, but not, you know, making sure we bring kind of everybody along with us. In terms of being progressive, I think some of us get stuck in our ideals and we're purists. I consider myself a little bit more pragmatic, and so always have an open mind and always keep an open mind, and I think it's important to continue to change, but I'm also going to recognize that there's steps you have to take to get there, and change is incremental. So,
Amanda Barge, Monroe County Commissioner, thanks so much for being on Big Talk.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
That was WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaking with Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge. This edition of Big Talk and all previous editions of Big Talk are available at WFHB.org. Extended versions can be found at electronpencil.com.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, construction downtown, is it a curse or a blessing? If one walks or drives around downtown Bloomington, one cannot help but notice that new buildings are sprouting like mushrooms after a rain. And one also starts to wonder whether this is a good or a bad thing. We have asked your friends and neighbors about their thoughts regarding downtown construction.
Mainly, I just wish that they would do construction one area at a time, because every route you take to get around the construction, you run into more construction, no matter which side of town you're on.
Well, it's good growth for the town. We've had a lot of that in the last 20 years, a lot. And it brings jobs, and you know, everybody gets to feed their families, and it makes us grow as a town, so it's cool. And like I say, the work, you can't beat the work. So I was born and raised here, and I've seen a lot change. For the best, that is.
In some instances, I feel like it's needed, just because I think that going towards modernization isn't necessarily a bad thing. But with the Chocolate Mousse, it was kind of sad to see that old store kind of go down and have a more modernized store. But I think in some instances, like I said, it's necessary. But I think in some cases, when it comes to history, it would be nice to let those things stay.
I believe that they've done a lot of good work here. A lot of it's newer and more modern and looking very nice. Good-looking buildings coming up. All it looks like is going to bring in a lot of attention. And also the Urban Station building with the Chocolate Mousse is now within that building. When it was just a little bitty building on its own, it's a lot better, I think. I think it adds the right touch to the Urban Station building. It's also got its own entity inside it. It's a nice chocolate shop or a ice cream shop type business that's been here in Bloomington a little while, and they've always had a lot of customers and people attention, and now they've got the building to go with it, so it's going to be great for Bloomington.
Well, the construction that's going on Washington and Craigwood is, I think, it's good one way, because there are a lot of improvements going on in the town or city. And the Chocolate Mousse, I'm a big fan of Chocolate Mousse, and then I've seen it in, it was like a parking lot where the store was before, and now the whole big building came up, and then I love Chocolate Mousse, so yeah, it's good thing that to see things are coming back. Regarding the construction that's going on in the city, looks like there's a lot of real estate, encouragement going on. That means a lot of business happening. Otherwise, people wouldn't construct just like that without any money coming, flowing into the town. One negative thing about Bloomington, about the constructions, I feel, is the cost of living, the rental, is really, really expensive. There are people who work for a basic minimum wages, they can't afford it. It's not that their parents are paying for them. But yeah, at the same time, it's a good to see the improvement, but at the same time, it's not that good to see the cost of living has, been increased so much.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, Alex Davis, and Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Przowski. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Doug Storm.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next here on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.